The power of the word. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing the thought for today, the power of the word. We have been reluctant in taking responsibility for the words that we use, the words that we speak, and because of that, we don't get the results. Because of that, things don't happen in our life that we would like to have happen. If we give qualified words in any area of our life, we'll get qualified responses. And the qualification may be just whatever it is we think it should be. The qualification may well be as limited as we can have it be. We have to be very careful. Do you know what a qualification is? A qualification is an adverb or an adjective. Anytime you use an adverb or adjective, you're qualifying your words. You're embellishing them or depleting them of their power. And when you embellish them of their power, you are carrying coals to Newcastle. You are doing a nothing task. Is there anything more magnificent than perfect? You can say, you're wonderfully perfect, you're grandly perfect, you're beautifully perfect, you're a great perfect person. If you say, you are a person, now let it alone. And what have you got? You have the ideal person. But the moment you say you're a wonderful person, then you're saying, there are times that you're not wonderful. I have been judging you as being wonderful or not wonderful, or being partly wonderful, or being wonderful under given circumstances, under given conditions, but you're not always wonderful. And you see, we want to be very careful of how we use our words. It's not too late. I mean, we may be, you know, over the hill. We may be out of range of the rest of the cycle of life. But if we had 10 minutes to live, wouldn't it be wonderful to live them saying, I am the pure white light of God. Everywhere I look, I see my God presence. Wouldn't it be something? Well, why wait? Why wait 100 years, 1,000 years until that happens? Now, start saying, I am the pure white light of God. Pure white light. I am the light of God. Now, we say pure white light because that helps us to sort of analyze the light. But is light white? Is light pure? Light has no capacity to be pure. Light is, by its very nature, without any blemish. Light may not be strong. Light may be weak. Light may be a little bit, but it's always perfect. Water is always perfect. Water is always clear and beautiful, even if it has ink in it, even if it has dirt in it. Water is always clear. You see, when you allow the water to stabilize and set for a moment, all the sediment drops to the bottom and the pure water is there. Now, it's true all of the sediment won't drop to the bottom instantly. It takes a little while because it's been pretty much homogenized into the water and shook up and mixed up and made part of the water. So it thinks it belongs in the colloidal suspension, but it doesn't. It only belongs in a release to go do its thing. The dirt and dust particles belong together. The water and its particles belong together. So, using that illustration, when we stop thinking limiting thoughts about ourselves, and we start saying, I am perfect. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Then it takes a little while for all those other ideas to pass away. I have a letter from one student here this morning. She was saying that she'd been a student of Joel Goldsmith and a student of Ernest Holmes in the Ernest Holmes Academy. And she said, but now she's ready to step beyond. She said, now I'm not trying to say that they were not good. Joel Goldsmith and Ernest Holmes were not good, which is true. But why did she feel she didn't have to say that? Why did she feel that she had to say Joel Goldsmith had been her mentor for many, many, many years and been very wonderful and important? Why did she feel she had to say that? She felt she had to say that because she didn't let go of them yet. She's still hanging on to them. She's still having them be part of her life. And of course, that's true because she hasn't moved into the next aspect of her training, which may be us. Now, when she comes here, do we want her to talk about Joel Goldsmith? Do we want her to talk about Ernest Holmes? Do we want her to talk about Herb Byerly? Do we want her to talk about Ellen Jaramini? Who do we want her to talk about? We want her to talk about herself. What is her opinion? Now, she may have gained some truths, and undoubtedly she has, from Joel Goldsmith. He was a marvelous sharer, marvelous teacher. She may have gained many wonderful truths from Ernest Holmes. He, too, was a fabulous teacher. She may have gained some things from Herb Byerly. But while she's gaining them, we are teaching her not to say Herb Byerly. Not even to say God Unlimited. To say, this I believe, this is now part of me. You understand? What I am now saying is mine. I am saying it. And I am making it mine. I am making it part of my life, part of the fabric of my thinking, of my life and my world. You see? It's very important. If we ever say, well, Herb Byerly said this, and Ernest Holmes said this, and Joel Goldsmith said this, and Joseph Murphy said this, they're all fabulous people. They're all magnificent people. They're the most wonderful people you'll ever meet on the face of the earth, especially that Herb Byerly. You know, the most wonderful people. Now, but don't lay upon them the limitation of your understanding. You see, when you say, Herb Byerly said this, you're not saying that Dodie Zimmerman is saying this. You're not saying that Ellen Jaramini is saying this. You're not saying that Ingeborg Pookert is saying this. You're not saying that Sylvia Enns is saying this. You're saying somebody else. Why bother saying it? It's just like going to a book for quotes. And in this wonderful Bartlett's book of quotations, there are many universal quotes. Well, as you know, every quote that has ever been made has been made by someone else before it was made by the person who was quoted as making it. And it'll be made by millions of people more after the quote has been made. Now, Shakespeare is credited with saying to be or not to be. Well, now, those are four words, five words. There are five words, and they've been hanging around forever. To is very common. Be is very common. Or is very common. Six words. Not is very common. To be. I think to be, to be. To be or not to be. So there's six words there. Now, they're all exceedingly minuscule words, very tiny, very common. They're in everyday language, but it's just who put them together. And you see, it's not just the to be or not to be. It is the rest of the soliloquy that Shakespeare has the Merchant of Venice saying. It's the rest of the soliloquy, the rest of it, which makes it powerful. And of course, then it comes down carrying its own weight. It comes down carrying its own power indwelling within it. It's embedded in it, like we can embed in some of our computer stories the typefaces that are being used in there. So whoever brings it up has the typeface right there to bring up with it, which is kind of nice. Now, our words have power. And what is the power of our word? It's how we use it. It's how we use it. And how are you using your words, and how am I using my words? Our friend here said she wanted to have an insight into the university. She wanted to have an insight into herself, into her divine self, into her absolute self. And this is what you guys have been talking about for a long time. You want to do that. But I don't find you, when it came time to read the course book, I didn't tell you what course books to read. You understand that? You do understand that. When you're doing your course reading here, I didn't tell you what books to read. I did not tell you what books to read. I said, read a course book. Now, could you have read the Relative Absolute? Could you not have read those course books? You surely could. And why didn't you read them? Because that's really not where you are. If you are, you would have that course book in your hip pocket. Even though it's not yet printed, it is all done. We have copies of it. You would have it in your hip pocket if that is where you are. Now, that's what our friend is saying where she is. She is saying that she is ready for absolute consciousness. And I think that's wonderful. I go along with her 100%. I'm ready for that too for you. Now, why is it that I doubt that you're ready for it? Because that's not something foremost on your mind every day. It's not in the words that you use every day. You see, if you say, I want to drive a car, and then you keep saying, I don't know how, I have the feeling you don't want to drive a car. If you say, I want to drive a car, and I know how, and you get out there and you practice what little know-how you have, you read the instruction manual on the car, you get into the driveway, or here we got a big driveway several miles long, and you can drive the car gently back and forth, you can step on the brake to see how it works, you can step on the gas for our golf carts, you can just do everything little by little. And as you do everything little by little, you have the ability soon to drive very well. And then you really do want to drive. Now, little children, 8, 12 years old, they want to drive more than anything in the world, don't they? So they get in the golf cart and they sit there, rah, rah, and they're driving it without driving it. And when they have the opportunity to drive it, they know where those pedals are. They know where the gas pedal is. They know where the ignition switch is. They know where the backward and forward switch is. They know all those things in the golf cart. They know it. Because they've been sitting there falling in love with that cart saying, one day I will drive this, one day, you know. And hopefully not when they're 16. They'd like to do it a little before that. But we work with them. And they do it. And Jerome, who is Gertrude's son, grandson, he comes in and he drives the golf cart. And he drives the golf cart sitting up straight, turning properly, not going too fast, although he likes to put on the brakes sometimes, but not going too fast, always being in control, turning a wide corner so that he's not going to flip over or do anything silly, and he's always in the master of the car. Now, he has Gertrude with him, who probably inspires a little bit of balance and a little bit of good judgment, but he's a living word. I drive the golf cart. And then we said, okay, you're the taxi driver. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm the taxi driver. I will drive anyone wherever they want to go. And Anthony said the same thing, didn't he? And everyone, what was his name?
The Saint Sankara.
He said the same thing. They love this, which who wouldn't really? They love it. But they place their word in motion very carefully. Very carefully. None of them is careless with their driving because they want to be able to drive. None of them says they can't because if they don't know something, they take somebody aside, will you show me how to do this? And so we show them how to do it. Then they say, yes, I can do that. I'm ready for that. They just are so happy. But you see, they're using their word very carefully. They're not going out and saying, I can do something that they can't do. They have sat in that golf cart for hours, perhaps, preparing themselves. I sat in my dad's car. Every car my dad had, I'd sit in there, and I knew where everything was without even looking. I could turn on the radio, I could pull out the clutch, and I could, not clutch, but I mean the choke, and do do all the things that had to be done. In the Model T, I knew where the spark lever was and the gas lever was, and what the different pedals did. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. I knew, because I loved it so. And, of course, driving was always fun. And because I loved it so, opportunities came for me. Now, girls don't like to drive. Girls are afraid of driving. Girls have always been told that they shouldn't drive. They shouldn't do this. And I sort of smile at that because it's so inconsistent. There are boys who don't like to drive too. And not because they're feminine or anything like that. They just don't like to drive. There are girls who don't like to drive. And there are girls who just dearly love to drive. Who would do anything to get out there and drive. And usually the boys shove their way in first, but they'd do anything to get out there and drive. But unless they are really cool, they're not successful. The boys take over. But all the girl has to do is say, "Dad, let me drive you. I would be so proud to drive you. If I drive you, Dad, oh, it would make my whole day. I'd be so happy." And what could the father do? He has to let her drive. And all the boys say, "Hey, I want to drive. It's my turn next. I'm going." "No, no, I think we'll give Susie a chance. Let her drive right now." And so, "Oh, you always give Susie." "Hey, boys, you talk like that, it's going to be a long time before you drive again." "Yeah." But, you see, the word is very important. And how Susie approaches, sure, she's manipulating her dad. The boys could too. The boys could say to their father, "Hey, Dad, let Susie and I sit on the car at the seat together. I'll show her all the things I know." What do you think the father would think of that boy? He'd think, "Hey, cool, son. That's real cool." Now, words are such a powerful thing, and we don't really give them the credit that they deserve because we do not really appreciate what the words mean. Now, I'm listening to many of you who speak with your Italian, Swiss, and German backgrounds, and how you wind your words around and so on, you can be understood perfectly clear. You can be understood wonderfully. But then I look at a person like Gregor, and I see how he speaks, and how he writes, and how he talks. He is very excellent. He makes sure that all of his word manners are in place. He makes sure that his words say what he wants to say, because he knows they can say otherwise. This is all I ask of any of you. Fall in love with words, because that's your new language here now. Fall in love with words and use them beautifully and perfectly. And if I ever give you a suggestion, always listen to me when I talk. Don't make me say it twice. Recognize immediately that I'm correcting you without making it sound like I'm correcting you. Speak perfect English and watch the control you have of your life experiences bloom forth majestically, because you're wonderful. And so am I. It's a wonderful world we live in, isn't it?
Yes.
The power of the word.